What's up, everybody? It's Sam with Rowdy Alternative. Today we have Sunny Sweeney, a singer-songwriter out of Texas. How you doing?
I'm great. I just got done walking my dog and chilling out, and the weather's starting to be decent again. Sorry, my phone's going crazy.
No, you're fine.
Finally, the weather's gotten a little bit better, so.
Yeah. Are you in Nashville?
Yeah.
What was it, in like the 60s today?
Yeah. And I went to walk, and I had on, you know, a tank top, a regular shirt, a sweatshirt, and a jacket. Then I got outside and I was like, shit, I'm dying out here. And I'm carrying this big jacket around with me. So not quite used to it yet.
Right. Yeah. We're getting there though. It was like 40 something here today, but even that feels warm compared to what it was.
I know, it was 6 last week. So it's really good.
Yeah. No complaints. But so what have you been up to? I know I peeked on your Instagram and stuff, and I saw you just came back from a Mile Zero Fest.
I did. That was always, it's like a reunion of sorts where it's like you see people that you don't get to see really ever. Mm-hmm. And then you always, or I always make new friends when I'm there. Like I met Taylor Honeycutt and I just love her. Oh my God, she's so sweet. And saw a bunch of people that I haven't seen all year. Really, I mean, Adam Hood, Brittany Hood, I haven't seen them in, I mean, probably since last Key West, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah. It always looks like a good time out there. I never made my way out there. Not yet, at least. But it looks like a blast. And didn't Ragweed come on stage, didn't they? Cross Canadian Ragweed?
Yeah. So my parents were there. And that was the night that I was eating with them. And we were sitting there. And my phone started blowing up. And I was like, oh, God, who died? Like, I was just like, because, you know, like.
Yeah.
And it was just like message. It's like Ragweed's on stage. It's like, wait, what? What?
That's awesome.
So I missed it, but I mean, yeah, I heard that. It was awesome.
Yeah, that's awesome. So I talked to a lot of Texas artists. A lot of them are still in Texas, and very few of them like made the move and everything. I'm curious, when I was like doing like a deep dive into your stuff, and like I listened to a few podcasts you were on. When you were first getting started, I guess, in Texas, what was the scene like then? Like, what were some artists that were like popping off at that moment, or like really popular at that time?
So I started, my first gig was like 2004.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to have to turn this just for 1 second. I got to mute this. My phone is going insane. Okay.
You're good.
Sorry about that.
No, you're fine.
I had to mute it real quick. So when I was first starting out, like there were just not that many women mm-hmm. in the Texas scene. There was, you know, I met one of my best friends early on. She's from Minnesota, but she lived in Austin. Her name is Brennan Lee. I met her very early on. And then, you know, like Shelly King, I was a big fan of, or still am a big fan of hers. And then Carolyn Wonderland, people that played around Austin. And then Kelly Willis, huge fan of Kelly Willis.
Mm-hmm.
And then for like years, there really just weren't that many women around, you know? And now it's like women are taking this shit by storm, you know what I mean? And so, but anyway, you know, when I would go see shows, I would always try to go see Kelly Willis every time I could. But then I saw, I used to go see Casey Chambers a lot. I mean, she's not a Texas artist. She's Australian, but I was a huge fan of her and Lucinda Williams every mm-hmm. time she would come to town. And I always just feel like I understand the songs that these women are singing at me, you know, and I don't know if that's because I'm a woman and mm-hmm. I understand what their plight is and what they're singing about. But I'm not saying that because they're women. I'm just saying like that's just the songs that I related to. And then I got really into like the songwriting aspect of it. And I fell in love with this woman's music named Lori McKenna and also Mary Gaucher. And I started just really diving into some of these songwriters and just could not believe that I didn't know these people prior in my life, you know, like I felt like they were literally getting me through life. So that's really what I listened to, in the very beginning of my career. And then my, you know, boyfriend at the time was really into like Texas country. So we would go see a lot of that. Texas country, and then like my mother is obsessed with Robert Earl Keen, so we, my whole family has always gone to see Robert Earl Keen, and of course Jerry Jeff, you know, my dad and stepmother went down to the Camp Belize. So I mean, the Texas thing we had covered, but my parents are all very, you know, big fans of music, and so we've always had music kind of going around our house at all time. Music is kind of the center, you know, point for all of our gatherings and, you know, all that. And thank God they've got good taste, in my opinion, because by osmosis, you learn the music that you grow up listening to, you know? Mm-hmm. So I know every John Prine song because my mom's a huge John Prine fan, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And it, going back to the female presence, I do feel like that has definitely, and at least in the Texas scene for sure, you got like gals like Gracie York and all them out there, and it's just really cool to see more of a presence. And going off
for
that,
sure.
So is that do you feel like there has been more of a women's presence in country music as a whole, whether it be Nashville, any other place, or is it more of like a regional thing? Because I hear different opinions all the time on it, and I see like festival lineups. Sometimes there's like one woman act on it and stuff like that.
The festival thing is a sore subject for me, and I don't like getting into it because it pisses me off. No, I mean, I will. I'm saying it just pisses me off because it's like you go to these festivals and, yes, there will be a woman on the lineup, but they start at like 2:30 in the afternoon.
Yeah.
So like, how are the women ever supposed to get ahead if they always are at 2 o'clock in the afternoon when nobody's there?
Right.
So it's a very sore subject. I have a lot of women that I'm friends with in this business, and we've all talked about it. And there was one festival, I don't even remember the name of it, but it was all guys. Main stage all day. And then there was this little tiny stage off to the side that was the after party.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where yours truly got to play at 1:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's just, it's so disappointing because it's like kick us while we're down. Like, we already know that, you know, the pay isn't the same. And I'm not like, it's not anything that anybody doesn't know.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a sore subject for me and for any woman that, you know, that is a touring act, because, you know, maybe I don't sell the same tickets or whatever, but there are certainly artists that are worthy of the main stage at main times, you know,
for sure.
And it just, it's very frustrating. It's very frustrating. I forgot what you even asked me because I got
no, that's
my fine. Brain kind of took over, but,
it is just strange because like, I could never put a finger on why, like, there's no reason for it. Like, people's songwriting is people's songwriting. I get not liking a person's song, sure, but
I don't know either. I don't know either, because some of my, and again, my boyfriend is my guitar player. I mean, he knows all of my, you know, music, obviously, and he knows all my friends' music because they're my friends, and I talk about my friends, and I listen to my friends' music. And he's even said, like, some of the most badass stuff you play is women. Like, he goes, just coincidentally. And I'm like, I know. I don't know if it's just because we've been repressed, sort of, and we've got so much shit pent up that we have to say,
mm-hmm.
Or something. I don't know. But then there's also a lot of my friends have really just great music and great minds, and regardless of what sex they are. I mean, this, you know, it's not, what I'm saying is it's not just me relating to them,
yeah.
because I'm a woman. There's a full grown man that loves their music as well. And it's the same as me with male music. Like, I love Jason Isbell. I think the man could do no wrong. Like, I think he's one of the greatest writers that we've ever known in our lifetime. And, his record Southeastern is absolutely insane.
Yep.
And I wouldn't care if his songs were sung by, you know, a turtle. Mm-hmm. I still would think it was a great song. Like, I don't care who the person is or what they look like or do or who, whatever. I don't know. Yeah. I just want the best song to win.
Mm-hmm.
And I do feel like women are doing a very good job with putting out some really well-crafted songs.
Yeah.
And we are getting more opportunities. I say we, like, as a whole, but I mean, there are more women present
mm-hmm.
in places. And there's a friend of mine has, she sends, there's some Instagram page that like takes tour posters and marks out all the male names. Oh. And then it shows the whole poster. And then the next page is like all the male names marked out. And there'll be like one name out of like a 3-day festival.
Yeah.
So those are increasing, like I will say. And there are women that are breaking through, like Sierra Farrell's doing, you know, fuck, just killing it. There are a lot of women doing really well, you know? Mm-hmm. So I say just keep on the path, keep on the trajectory, keep, you know, hammering away. And when my girlfriends get super down and they're like, oh my God, this is so hard. I'm like, I know, but you've already been doing it this long. Like, just put your nose down and like work.
Yeah.
Just work. Stop bitching. Just work, you know?
For sure. Yeah. And it is, it's something that I'd like to think is getting better. I really do. Like, you see,
it
you
is.
See like people like Ella Langley out there is like on top of the world right now. Like it's good to see for sure. And,
yeah, for sure.
Hopefully it keeps getting better. But, going back a little bit to we were talking about like Texas and Nashville and stuff. I'm curious as to how when and like how that step was like moving to Nashville or getting involved with that scene from a place like Texas. Because I don't know if it's always been like you have that classic Texas versus Nashville thing that's been going on for a little while from artists that, you know, some people think that, some people don't. But I'm curious as to how that whole process was for you.
For me, I, at a, you know, very early in my career, knew that I didn't just want to play in Texas. Like I had no, some people are totally fine with mm-hmm. that and that it works for some people. I have ADD really bad. And so I need new environments all the time. Like I need fresh energy and like things to look at. And I'm just like, I need all new stuff all the time, like to viewing things. Right. So, yeah. So very early on, I knew I wanted to get into the songwriting world up in Nashville. And I knew that I also was broke. Mm-hmm. And, I went and took out a loan at my bank for like $16,000 or $17,000 simply for the fact of 1 year I was going to give myself to go up to Nashville every month for a week. And I flew up there because I knew driving up there would wear me out. So I went up there by myself. And I stayed at the Best Western on Demumbrian and flew in on the cheap flight and left on the cheap flight, rented a car that was like the size of a high top tennis shoe. Like, I mean, and I went to every single thing that I could go to. Like I went, you know, and met people and I went to writers nights. And I think in fairness, like I think that was a things were different a long time ago where you could go to the Commodore, whatever it's called, or you could go to, you know, some of these little tiny places that they used to have. I don't even know if they have them anymore. And you could see Tony Lane
mm-hmm.
play like, you know, some badass song, or, you know, you could see like some of the writers that were just giant writers, they would be just hanging around town, you know?
Yeah.
And then that's where I met like some of my co-writers that I'm still friends with now. Like I met Natalie Hemby at a writer's thing and, met, you know, Lori through a publisher that I had met because of Mary Gaucher. So, I mean, just times were so different, but I kept attempting to stay here and then Texas was always calling me back and I just kept, I moved here in 2007 and then I moved home and then I moved here in 2013 and then I moved home.
Yeah.
And then I finally was like, why am I spending this much money traveling back and forth? It's easier to tour from here. It's so much easier to tour from here. Oh my Lord. 'cause it's so much more centrally located. And anyway, so we just decided to move like a couple years ago and I the only way I know that I could make myself for sure stay somewhere is to just to buy a house. So I literally bought a house, and now I'm here, and yep. I love it. I love it. I love the weather. I do miss Texas. I miss a lot of stuff about Texas, but I'm in Texas as much as I was before. I just, my residence isn't there.
Right.
You know? So, cause when I was home, I'd only be home like 3 days a month.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really, I'm there honestly about the same amount of time, and I still eat my Mexican food and, right. you know, go yeah. to my, go to my bars that I like and all that stuff.
Yeah. Right on. So, I guess when you compare from your point of view, when you play out in Texas or you play in Nashville, whether it be the fan bases in each region or the market or anything, any real difference? Well, is there a big difference? Is it relatively the same?
No, I feel like, and I think honestly, this is probably the general consensus for Texans. Like I think I took for granted how much music there was everywhere in Austin.
Mm.
Like there was music at the grocery store. Like, I'm not kidding. Like, there would be a bar, like a band set up at Central Market. Every Mexican restaurant has a band. Every tiny little honky tonk has a band. And then when you play those places, people are so conditioned to having music everywhere that even if they're sitting there eating, they're like,
yeah,
clapping, you know? And so when you go and play like in some other town at some other grocery store or whatever it is that you play at, you know, they're not necessarily as taken by the fact that there's music. Like we had music in Austin everywhere. So mm-hmm. I was conditioned for that. And then when I started touring outside of town, I was like, wait a minute, do these people hate me? Like, what is going on? Like, am I not doing a good job? Nobody clapped, you know, but then I started thinking, I'm playing in a freaking, you know, Walmart bra section. Of course, I'm not like, what am I doing?
Right.
So I made up a fake booking agent name. This is right when I was starting out and made myself a man and started booking myself with a fake email. Nobody took me seriously. Like right. it was something now that's funny that I can talk about, but it really beat me down, like starting out, really beat me down. And there were plenty of, you know, chauvinistic, you know, males that I had to deal with. And a lot of the bar scenes, you know, that being said, there were equally as many amazing men that gave me opportunities that I would have never had otherwise. But those ones, the bad ones can really honestly shape how you feel about stuff so much.
Yeah.
And there was a couple, man, that really almost made me quit. Like a couple times I thought, what the hell am I doing? Why am I continuing to do this? And this was when I'd been doing this 2 years.
Yep.
You know, now it's been 20 years and I'm still just, I love my job and there's definitely lows and highs. But man, some of the lows can really get you down. But then those highs can just keep you going yeah. for, you know, quite a while.
Yeah. It's actually funny you mentioned the Mexican restaurant thing. Whenever I have like Texas artists on here and I ask them about, like, you know, when they first started out, stuff like that, like a lot of them do say, yeah, we used to play some like Mexican restaurants. And I'm like, play Mexican restaurants? Like, I never knew that was a thing. Like, it's hilarious. Like, I would never expect that.
It is. And also, not only do you have to play Mexican, I played everywhere that I could play that would hire me.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't give a shit if they paid me. I'd had a tip jar that I still have. It sits out in my garage to remind me every single time I walk out the door, you know, how far that I've come, because some days are kind of downers. But yeah, I would take that tip jar around. I'll send you a picture of it when I get off the phone. It's real funny. but I had my own PA. I had a Ford Excursion. That was what our touring vehicle was. It was so loud and the muffler was broken. And I would put that PA in my back of my Excursion and I would drive to the gig and it was speakers on a stick and two, you know, wedges. And the guys would bring their own amps and I brought all the cables and I would set up my own, you know, monitor and PA and run my own sound from stage. Like, and it taught me a lot. But yeah, you had to have all that stuff because you couldn't really afford to rent it. You just had to invest in it because if you rented it, it cost $50 to rent it and you're only making $50.
Right.
So you basically, you know, you kind of have to to do it that way. So I went and bought all of that stuff. And so I just schlepped it around in my, you know, car. And I remember this one guy came up to me when I was loading in my stuff. And my dad's always told me, like, if you want something done, you got to do it yourself, you know, and you can ask for help. But it's easier just to do it than you don't have to explain it to anyone. Mm-hmm. You know you're going to do it right. And I remember this guy, this older gentleman was trying to be helpful, but he's like, what are you carrying that in for? Who, you don't have some help, Karen? I was like, do you see anyone else in my vicinity? Or, I mean, no, yeah. It's just me. He didn't offer to help. He didn't say, can I carry it for you? He was making sure that I knew that I was carrying it myself. I was like, no shit, Sherlock. Yeah, I know that I'm carrying it myself. And he didn't even offer to open the door for me. So I had to walk the big, you know, 15-inch speaker over there, sit it down, pull the door open, pick it up again, walk back through. And, like, I do feel like those times really they shaped everything for me. And that's why I don't take anything for granted now. Like, anything good that happens, I'm like, at least I'm not schlepping my own PA anymore, you know? Because that was so hard for me. Like, that was a really, really, really rough time.
Yeah.
But also, again, I know how to do all of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I had to run sound at a private party the other day because nobody else knew how. So we were just set up our shit and we had to do that. And, you know, I was like, okay, wait, I got to remember how to do this now. But I mean, we figured it out and it sounded really good.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's all about hustling and seeing how far you come. And speaking of that, like from the beginning to now, like with the change, all these changes in the music industry and everything, especially what always comes to my mind and I find really fascinating is the social media aspect and how that's become such a big like part of it, you know, for good or bad. A lot of people have different opinions. What maybe that, or like not specifically that, but over the course of the years and all these changes in the industry and everything, like did you find it for you personally hard to evolve with that, or like, was it an easy change as it went, or how'd that go?
I always feel like I was about a year behind everything because I'm not real technical, to be honest with you. I've had to force myself to be a little more technical now because I do these radio shows remotely on Sirius, which, I mean, my boyfriend laughs because he's like, Sonny, you used to ask me to do a remote for you.
And now you're on Sirius.
And he's like, and now you can run a radio show when we're in Japan. Like, give me a freaking break. Like, you know. So he said that I've really caught up with the times. But I mean, I will say, I remember MySpace. And I remember it was very weird. It was very uncomfortable for me. And I remember thinking, like, okay, but what if there's people I don't want to see me? Like, you know, and I had to get over that. That was the part that I had to get over. Like, friends that I grew up with that weren't really friends, you know, that like, you know what I mean? Like,
for sure.
Where they weren't your friend. And then now they think they're your friend.
Yeah.
You know? So I had to seriously get over that because that was like something that I struggled with really bad.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, no, I mean, everybody got like, you know, Facebook, and I think I was talked into it in like 2009.
Mm-hmm.
But everyone, all my friends had already had it since, you know, the year before that. And tell you what's humbling is going back to the beginning and looking at your post from the beginning.
Yeah, I do that like from a week ago.
Oh, God, I know. It's so bad. And anyway, and honestly, like Instagram, I feel like I got more into Instagram than I did Facebook because I do like Instagram a lot. And I do like the filters that they have for like, especially you don't have to put your face on there. You can take like a beautiful picture of a sunset, which I love. It's not just because my name's Sunny. I've always loved sunsets. But I have so many sunset photos on there and like filtering them. And that's something that makes me happy. Like I can go back and look at sunset pictures on my phone because it saves it in your camera roll, you know? And it's something that genuinely makes me happy. Mm-hmm. So like if I'm having a bad day, I will literally type in sunset in my camera roll, all pictures I've taken from Instagram for the last, you know, 10 years or whatever.
Yeah.
And I love looking at them. So I use it for stuff like that too. And then also like being able to keep track of dates and stuff and, mm-hmm. you know, it's not all bad. I do think that if you would have told me that I had to have social media to be able to have a music career, I would have been like, dude, come on. Like, that's so stupid. But now, I mean, you know, you're doing it for the gram or whatever the saying is. Like,
yep, for sure. Yeah. It's kind of crazy just seeing how things progress over time. But you know, you got to keep up with it. Like, that's the thing. And, but yeah, and the radio thing, let me tell you something. When I was like looking up your stuff and everything the other day, it was one of those times where you think you're just learning of someone, but then you're like, wait, I know who this person is. That's how it was with you with the Sirius stuff.
Oh, cool.
Which is funny because like, and I got to thinking about like Sirius Radio. I haven't had it for a while. And, I was wondering if like, do you think that like, cause you hear a lot now that streaming's king, which, you know, I'm sure it is, but like a lot of people aren't listening to the radio anymore. But then I go and I look around and like a lot of people are still listening to the radio. And that got me thinking, like, do you, from your standpoint, like see that at all? Like and Sirius is an, you know, anomaly of itself being like satellite radio and everything. And I'm kind of wondering if like, do you see like audience dips or anything like that, like on the logistical statistical side? Or
you mean comparing like my shows or what?
Yeah, like just I guess in general, like do you like compared to, I don't really know how it works, but yeah, your shows, like do you
like for me, like I am a music fan, mm-hmm. first and foremost. Like I said earlier, I've grown up being around music and I freaking love music and I don't know what I would do without it. So I guess that's good that I'm in my job. But frankly, I have not listened to the actual radio in 14 years.
Okay.
Like yeah. I can't. Like yeah. I cannot and I will not. It's not anything there for me. And it doesn't do anything for me. Mm-hmm. Like physically, emotionally, zip.
Yep.
That being said, I've also had Sirius before it was even Sirius XM. I had it when it was XM. I've always loved satellite.
Mm-hmm.
And granted, I get mine free, obviously, because I work for them now, but I've paid for it since like 2001 or something, you know? Yep. And, I'm genuinely a fan of it. And I'm also very grateful for the opportunity because it completely came out of left field. Yep. But that being said, like I have seen an increase in just overall visibility because it's a, you know, goes to Canada and all over the US and I intentionally in the very beginning, I've been there almost 3 years, and in the beginning I intentionally did not talk about my music career on there because and my old boss that passed away in June, he's the one that actually said, you really should talk about your music career. And I said, but I want these people to find out about that after they like me as a person. You know yeah. what I mean? Like, not that it's like some nepotism or whatever that word is, but like, I don't want it to be like that. And so he's like, all right, cool. You know, so he kind of let it go for a little bit. And then he was like, look, there's people asking that finding out you're an artist, like you need to talk about your shit and like, you know, advertise yourself. And I was like, okay. So I have recognized the fact that there are definitely people that show up that didn't know
mm-hmm.
prior, you know, I have fans that knew that I got that gig that of course followed me to SiriusXM, but the fans that started at SiriusXM that have followed me to the music side of my life, that's a whole other level of, fan that I never expected to have. And they're different fans. They're all different types of fans. You know, like they're different than like my music fans that have been there since day one that have grown with me. So it's like, they're learning about me from this stage of my career, you know, instead mm-hmm. of watching me grow from 20 years, you know? So It's crazy. It's a whole different thing. It's something I never thought I would be able to talk about because that is just so out of left field.
Yeah. Yeah, for
sure. It's real weird. It's real weird.
Yeah. And I've always been kind of a nerd when it comes to radio stuff. I've always loved knowing how it works and like just the stations and stuff. So I'm wondering, like, how did you stumble into it? How did you get involved with that?
With Sirius?
Yeah, with your shows and everything.
So honestly, my boss that passed away in June, his name is Jeremy Tepper. He's been a friend of mine and a big supporter of mine since the very beginning of my career. And, I hadn't talked to him in like, I don't know, 7 or 8 years. Mm. And, when we had that freeze in Austin a couple years ago, I was there and, I was over at my sister's and I needed to go run to the store. And so we didn't have any heat. So I went to the store, sat in my car in the heat. And then I get this random text and it was like, "Hey, is this still Sweeney?" And I was like, "Yeah, hey, what's up, man? Like,
yeah,
what's happening?" Like, random. Yeah. He's like, "Hey, your name keeps getting tossed around to do this radio show. Would you be into it?" And I said yes before I asked if I had to move or if I got paid or anything. I just said, "Oh, hell yeah. Like, I'll do it. I want to do it." Because I was looking for something to change my, spice my life up a little bit. So I took that gig on Willie's. And then I would fill in over in Outlaw Country for like Elizabeth Cook, who's one of my just absolute, I freaking love her. I love that woman. But when she would go out of town or something, I'd fill in for her or I'd fill in for Mojo. And then Mojo passed away last February. And I just was talking to Jeremy while he was on, you know, the cruise where Mojo had passed. And he said, "You know, I'm not even back for a couple more days. Is this something that you can cover for a couple days till I can get it under my belt?" You know, I said, "Dude, don't even worry about it. Yes, I've got you." And I was mid tour. We were like in the middle of a 7-week run too. So, my band thought I was an idiot, 'cause they were like, "You're already in the middle of a tour and you're doing Willie's Roadhouse and you're going to pick this up too." That being said, I kind of just got, in the rhythm of just doing both shows, and it just really works. And my band is super helpful and they get us from point A to point B. And then they're all quiet in the green room when I can do my show. And then I get up early and go get my coffee, and I've just gotten in this little rhythm of doing it. So now that's just how it happened. It's very weird. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't have another answer except for that. It's so weird. It's
very weird. You sound very busy. It sounds like a very busy life you're leading.
It is. I need to take a nap. I really do. I need to take a nap.
Oh, man. That's awesome, though. But let's talk about your latest record that came out in August. I gave it a listen today. It was very good. I loved it. And I actually really liked your – I have it pulled up here. It was a live album. I want to get it right. Recorded live at Machine Shop Recording Studio.
Thank you.
Yeah. And live albums for me are usually kind of like,
me too,
either good or bad, you know, or just if I like it or not. And that one was really great. I was really impressed by that. And but let's talk about Still Provoked. I guess, is there a message or like a theme or anything like that when you put those songs together? Like, was there any kind of message you wanted to get across with it?
Well, so Provoked is my record that I put out in 2014. Mm-hmm. And honestly, like, that was just songs that I had written going through my first divorce, honestly, are a lot of them. And, we just recorded them. And then when it came time for the 10-year anniversary to put it out, I was too tired to make up a new name. So I called it Still Provoked. And then we added 2 new songs and went back and redid everything. Musically, we redid all the parts and stuff. And so, you know, not necessarily a message, but as a fan, I love stuff like that. I love having a limited pressing of something that most other people aren't going to have.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because indie artists, especially, we don't sell a lot of records. We just sell what we sell at shows and online. It's not like we're some big moneymaker, you know? Mm-hmm. And, I just always think of stuff as, how would I want somebody that, like, I think if Casey Chambers put out a 10-year anniversary of a record that I already have and love, but she was redoing the songs acoustic, I'd buy, you know, for sure the first copy I could get my hands on.
Yeah.
So that's the only reason I did it. And honestly, I haven't had a record out since 22, and that was 24. And we just recorded a new record that's going to come out in the summer of this year. So it was just kind of a little, you know, 10-year kind of little party.
Yeah.
Party pant, kind of put on your party panties kind of thing. And
yeah.
There was no real reason for it. I just thought it would be nice and redo the artwork 10 years later and, get my band involved in it 10 years later. You know, the different guys that weren't there 10 years ago. And, yeah, I'm real happy with it. I'm real proud of it. Harley and I went in and redid all of it. So I'm proud of it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's great. And that's a cool idea too. Like, I never thought about that, like on like an anniversary or something. That would be a really cool thing to do. I think more artists should do that. I think so too.
Yeah. Honestly, because as a fan, like I said, if Lucinda put out a record that was a 10-year or any kind of any different recording, I don't like it when they say it's remastered.
Yeah.
I can't tell a difference. I mean, yeah. If I sat down with, like, you know, marking down on seconds what sounded different, but like, I want it redone, mm-hmm. you know, and something that, like, audibly you can hear the difference, and like the singing is, you know, the harmonies are different, or like the, you know, the guitar part, or the guitar is a different instrument, or anyway, I like look at it from that angle and just go, well, that would have been cool if, you know, if Casey did that. I love Casey Chambers.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, that's the only reason I did it.
Yeah. And like the remastered stuff, I feel like that I think that's only for like collectors, maybe, like a physical stuff. And like, I've never been that big into any artist, even my favorite band. It's like I'd look at the Beatles. I love the Beatles, but they come out every freaking year with like, oh, Revolver or Abbey Road remastered. It's like, you've done this 15 times. Like, what else can you do?
And
they'll put a demo at the end or something. Like, who cares?
I know. And I've got good ears. Like, I know I can hear different things going on, but it's not enough of like a difference for me.
Yeah.
So, and also, you know, it's expensive. Mm-hmm. It's like, why am I going to buy the exact same record when literally, you know, lowered the bass guitar in the main track or something, you know? So
for sure. Yep, for sure. But let's talk a bit about, you mentioned you got some stuff coming out in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
What can you tell us about that?
Well, I don't have a name of the record yet, but I will tell you that it is a honky-tonkin' record.
Right on.
Yeah, we've got 10 songs, maybe 11. I can't decide if I'm going to put this one song on there or not, but because it's a cover song, but it's one of my favorite cover songs. So we went ahead and recorded it, but I may hold it and release it later. I don't know. But it's definitely got 10 songs on it, some new ones and some old ones. And I can tell you that I recorded a Casey Chambers song, and she sang on it with me.
Oh, nice.
Which is like, you know, really exciting for me. As soon as I have a title for it and get some artwork, I'll send it. It's just my head's been surgically implanted in my butt for the last couple months, and I can't pull out of it. So I'm trying.
Right. Yeah. That's awesome. But, Sonny, thanks for hopping on. This was really fun to talk to you. But
you too. Good to see you.
Yeah, you too. But before we go, since it's January, beginning of 2025, got the whole year ahead of us. Do you have any certain goals, short term, long term, like for this year, that off the top of your head?
The only goal that I have, because all my goals, you know, when I started, I thought, you know, shit, I made it. I'm getting free beer, you know, like. And so kind of all of my goals have I have done things that I never thought in a billion years would happen. Play the Grand Ole Opry 72 times, have a exhibit at the Country Music Hall of Fame, be nominated for like awards, like weird stuff like that. But honestly, do you know what the one thing that I will always say is my goal, whether it's the most outlandish thing or not, but I want to be a member of the Grand Ole Opry.
Yeah.
I do. Like, that's like something very special to me. And it's something that, it's the smallest club mm-hmm. in the music business. It's like the smallest club in the music business. And, you know, every single one of my heroes
yep.
came before me is a member of the Grand Ole Opry. So yeah. including Loretta. So, I mean, she's like my end all be all, but, you know, she's there. You can see her.
She sits
there and watches over me every day.
I was wondering who that was. I actually was thinking Davy Jones from the Monkees for some reason. I think it looks just like Davy Jones. God. Maybe it's the angle. I'm at a weird angle.
Here, let me. That right. is...
Okay, I see the long hair now. I see
okay.
it.
Okay. Oh my God, that is hilarious. I am gonna tell my friend that painted that you thought it was Davy Jones. It does. I can see what you're talking about now with the hair.
It's the when face,
I
yeah.
cut off. Yes. Oh yeah. my God, that is so funny.
But yeah, that's funny. But thanks for hopping on. It was really fun talking to you. And also, if you have any shows or anything like that you want to throw out there or plug socials, websites, the floor is yours.
I mean, anyone can always go to my website. And we're touring. We start again in March. Full time with the band. We've got the Outlaw Cruise coming up in February, but then we're going to be in the Midwest all in the beginning of March, like in Chicago and St. Paul and all the way down to like Omaha and Little Rock. And then at the end of March, we are doing Green Hall again in New Braunfels. And last time it sold out. So
oh, yeah.
I would love to sell that shit out again. So mm-hmm. Everyone come buy tickets. And then that weekend where it like Bertram, Texas and Plano, Texas. And I think Plano, there's a couple tickets left. They just announced that a couple days ago, but it's a cool little place that we've played at forever. But yeah, just grab some tickets and go to our Instagram and Facebook and all that and come say hey. Never know, you might see this guy.
Oh, you got to go now.
You might see this guy. You never know.
Hell yeah.
He just sits around and, you know, admires. He's my biggest admirer, so I keep him around.
That's awesome. But everyone, make sure to do that. Check her out on the website. Go to a show. All that fun stuff. And also, check out Raise Rowdy, Rowdy Alternative. Just Google us and we'll show up. So, Sonny, thanks a lot for hopping on. This
Thank
was
you
fun.
Again.
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks everyone for listening, and we'll see you guys next time. My boots would look good on your bed, and I bet you can do some crazy things with those hips. You've been turning me on all night, so why don't you and I run and tell your friends who's gonna take you home tonight?